Put Your Brains Out by Gold Medal Squared.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
All right, welcome to the second episode of the Coach Your Brains Out book club. We're going to dive into the first chapter of the book, Philosophies and Principles. And we really kind of come out swinging in the first chapter, asking some of the big questions. And I guess we'll start out with that question for you guys. The first question is, why are you coaching? So I don't know, Billy, if you want to go first, kind of explain why you coach.
Yeah, to make money, number one. Also, change and improve kids' lives and my players' lives by sharing something that has been a big part of my life and I'm really passionate about. And I'd like to share that and make volleyball a part of their lives and help to challenge them too.
Money's usually the main reason for coaches that I found.
I mean, like, if I'm honest, I know coaches that would coach for free, and I probably wouldn't. But yeah. I enjoy it, and it's a good job.
You'd only do podcasts for free about coaching.
Right.
Got it. What about you, Nils?
Yeah, I mean, if we're being honest, I probably started coaching because I needed the money. It was a club gig while I needed to, you know, just have the cash. So that's how it started. And then I just fell in love with the process of teaching and learning. You know, if I had learned something, being able to teach it to somebody else was a lot of fun. And I realized that the more I taught, the more that I learned. And so it just was a slow process of kind of falling in love with what that looked like in the relationships developed out of that.
Nice. What about you, Fuller?
Yeah, I think it's evolved quite a bit. I initially was drawn to coaching because of just the joy of being around the game, and something that it's evolved into is the excitement to dig into challenge with players and everything that comes along with that. And I'll get into that later on in the show, but it reverberates so much further into their lives than just the sport. And I think we understand that sport generally has a pretty limited window, and to have something that can affect their lives down the road is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is powerful. I think I like that we started the book this way. There's the great book by Simon Sinek, Start With The Why. You know, kind of if you have your why, then the what and the how and all the other stuff come into place. But if you know why you're doing it, then the rest of it kind of, you can figure it out. So I've tried to like simplify my why. I know he says to like keep it under a certain amount of words, but so to make it as simple as possible, it's my why is to help the people I care about grow. I really value learning, and I like helping anybody grow and improve. And I love seeing that when someone's getting better, but it means so much more when it's someone you really care about and you see them begin to grow and flourish. And I think that's why I like having a team, being a part of a college program, high school program. It's so rewarding because you get to be with people for a long period of time and you get to see them grow. So the next kind of thing we hit up on the book is what's your major objective? And I think this is another important one to think about, because there's the, you know, there's the objective of you, and then there's the objective of your team. And we talk about like how those have to be aligned. So I guess it kind of depends on the level you're at. I don't know, Billy, when you go to your club teams, what's your major objective?
The last couple of years of coaching has been a little different, because I've been coaching a beach club, and we actually don't, like, I rarely coach at tournaments. I think one major tournament a summer I'm actually at for competition. The rest of the time it's just practice. So I guess my major objective would be teaching the skills of volleyball to these younger players and developing their skills. So mostly around just increasing competence, and then just creating a cool, positive, fun environment that they want to be around and keep coming back to, and kind of just give them the skills to push them off to play in tournaments and play with their parents and play as much as possible. So very much just developing skills has been my objective with the last couple of years of coaching.
How have you been doing at it?
I think it's very much dependent on the player. we have some pretty young kids that are like, you know, can't serve the ball over from half court that are there kind of just to have fun and goof around. And I would say I'm not very successful with teaching them the skills, but they have fun and they keep coming back, which is another important part and probably part number two of the objective. And the kids that are like serious and good and into it, I think I've had success there, and it seems like they've been growing. So it's been fun to be around them. I don't know how you guys handle it or see it. I know Niels, you work with a lot of juniors programs too, but it's way harder for me to coach 12-year-olds than it is to coach 18-year-olds.
Yeah. So I kind of want to follow up on that. So like, what do you do in your objective? I think your objective was to help people learn the skills, mm-hmm. but what if they're, this 12-year-old coming and they just kind of want to hang out with friends and hang on the beach? How do you do that?
When I ran a club, a beach club, it killed me. And I was stressing and really trying to figure out, one, to get them better, but also like to make it a good practice for the other kids there. Because if you have a court with two different objectives, like some kids want to goof around and talk and have fun with their friends, and some are serious, and you know, having a drill killer versus people that are actually trying to do their reps is really tough. But now that I'm more of an assistant, whatever court I'm giving, I just try to do my best. If one girl's not getting as good because she's maybe not as focused, like I'll coach her where she's at and maybe make some baby steps. And so I definitely am more flexible. What about you guys?
You have to definitely figure out what those objectives are. You know, are the objectives from the player and the learner, or do the parents also have an objective of giving you a kid for 2 hours? Those are usually the ones that are the most challenging. So yeah, making sure that you figure those situations out is really important as well.
It's multiple objectives, hopefully of multiple courts.
Yeah. No, it seems like a important thing for coaches is that your objective isn't like 10 steps from their objective, but I don't think you want to just like sink to like, you know, where they're at if it's not reaching their potential. Like part of coaching is trying to get the best out of people. So maybe your objective can, you know, be one or two steps higher and trying to see like, you know, you can do more than you believe and you can push yourself a little bit harder and here's how. I think when it gets in trouble is when it's like, you know, when it's, there's a big separation between what you want and what they want.
Right.
Yeah. It's similar to, I guess the way that I articulate it to the teams is my objectives are always number one, to help the team reach its full potential or perform at its full potential. And then number two, to help each player reach there and perform at their full potential, whatever that is. So it's one of those things that when you're speaking in a group of parents of players and everything, the number one objective is always to the team. And we're going to do everything we can with whatever role that player is in to help the team out. And then from there, we're going to help the player do what they need to do to help reach their full potential as well. And in the past, at least, especially when you're dealing with, I think bigger groups of people, that's really helpful. Especially when you have, like I had so many times when you frame it in that way, a lot of the conversations I had were not necessarily with just the players. You know, it was the parents were very involved and you had to make sure that they were in on everything that was going on. So it was really important that they kind of understood that those were my objectives. So when they would come and say, why is little Johnny sitting on the bench? You'd have some, obviously, hopefully some data, but then it was also like, well, would it be best for the team if he played? Right. They'd be like, no, but it would be best for him. Well, okay. Well, I have to make sure that one, and I said in the beginning that's my number one priority is the team and then the player.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me that I think so far, and we'll hear Andrew's objective next, but like for both you guys, it's, you know, both things that are within your control. I think that's what I'd recommend for coaches is, you know, make sure the objective you choose and what you want to do with your team is something that you can actually help foster. Because I think, you know, a lot of times as a coach, my objective is to win the city title or the national championship or whatever it is. And that's a good goal to have. But that's, you know, those sorts of things are more outside of your control and depend on how good the other teams in your league are. So I think that's an important step. And like when you're thinking about it.
Well, another thing on that, I always think it's funny, not funny, but it's interesting to me when any conference, any time you're playing, it's probably most team's goal or even on the beach, like every AVP, every P tournament, everybody's probably going, I want to win the tournament. Like that's the goal. That's what we want to do. Right. At the end of the day, if you could choose to do that or not, you would probably do that. Even if there was some weird other things like, would you rather become a much better player and lose or win the tournament? You're like, I probably want to win the tournament just to go ahead and do that. So it's interesting that national championships, yeah, whatever level you're at, it's like when you're playing whatever game you're playing, the goal is always to win, but not to get caught up in that being the only thing that matters.
Yeah, no, definitely. It matters. That's why we play sports. Yeah. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking off of what Nils was saying with figuring out what your team wants to accomplish and helping support that. And so that's a big objective. I don't know if you have seen The Simpsons, and there's this great part where Homer like sinks back into the bushes. There's a great gif of it. That's like, that's what I want to do. I just want to make myself less and less relevant by letting the players have so much ownership over it. But John, you wrote, you know, before the show, you asked what our three word coaching philosophy is. And a lot of that really ties into what my objective is. And my three word coaching philosophy is joy and challenge. And I think that those are two things that are very connected. And one thing that an objective that I have is to help young people understand that there is joy within challenge, and that it's not joy separate from challenge. I think that it's a fallacy to think that hard things aren't to be enjoyed or relished. And it's something that I've certainly like had to really work at in my own life. And so it's kind of like I want to support whatever their objectives are and their goals, the team, but show them that there's a way of doing this that can be really fulfilling.
Do you have an example of how you've done that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like there's a very obvious example of, okay, a challenge is gravity pulling weights down and you lift against gravity and you get stronger, like you build muscle fiber. But then there's also the challenge of digging into really hard conversations with teammates and being really honest with them. And it's difficult, it's challenging, but you ultimately get stronger relationships as a result of that.
But then where's the joy part? When I think of Billy lifting weights or having a hard conversation, he's on pins and needles. I don't know how joyful he is.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, that's a skill to believe. And there, a lot of it is in the after effects, the glow that you get from doing hard things. But we can also find like what Courtney Thompson has said, like when she's really down and struggling, she says to herself, this is it. Like, this is right where I want to be. I am in it right now. And so helping young players frame their attitude towards really difficult situations.
I remember, I like the, what you said about an after effect. And obviously it's like after you work out, you feel better. Maybe you don't feel work during it. I remember in college, we would have open gyms and like the first two games were pretty good. And then it would start to get a little goofier and goofier as it went on. And like in the moment, you maybe think you're having fun and like, I don't know, just talking, whatever, but like it's those games where you're really grinding, competitive and focused that like you go back, you're like, wow, that was a good practice. And maybe it feels different in the moment. What we think of as enjoy, but that challenge and stuff has way more lasting joy, I think, when you look back on your improvement and just how much you were pushing yourself.
Totally. And that ties into what we're doing after sports in life and gleaning some confidence from it. Like, I've done all these really difficult things in my sporting life. Okay, I've been through that. Now I can take that forward into, you know, my engineering job or like whatever the heck it is.
What about you, John? What's your objective?
Again, mine's pretty simple. It's just to become better learners and to become the best learners we can be, and to figure out the ways that we can do that. And so it's all different ways for different people. And that's, you know, you get to know the people you work with and understand how you can kind of light a fire under them and get them to want to be the best learners they can be.
John,
go ahead.
Can I throw something at you?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how you deal with frustration when you're dealing with somebody who is new to your program or new to the idea of learning as a skill?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of things to go with that. I mean, I think one thing that I'll do is, you know, I'll tell them, if I run a practice and you don't come out of it a little bit frustrated and making mistakes, like, I'm going to apologize. Like, I think I just really messed up. Like, I could run a practice where we all feel good and I tossed in free balls and we had no blockers up and just made everyone feel as good as possible and no one would get any better. And so I just want to be clear, like, for us to grow and improve, like, there's going to be hopefully a high level of frustration. And usually when you're in that spot, that's probably when we're on the right task. When the frustration is pretty high, like, that probably is a good sign that says we're in the place you want to be. I mean, there's stuff you can do with, like, you know, trying to explain a little bit how the brain works and, you know, how to build neural pathways. And it takes lots of reps and lots of mistakes. And I think there's all, you know, all sorts of ways you can go about it. But I think just that thing, like, I'll ask my players, like, you know, were you frustrated enough today? Did I push you enough today? And I'm sorry if I didn't. So I think just changing how you frame it. Yeah, it's a good question. Do you guys have better ideas on that? Other ideas?
Well, John, I would just say that I am constantly frustrated by you as a friend, and I appreciate that about you.
Yeah, that's what I've been striving for. See if we just.
I'm wondering when the press comes, just 2 points for hitting a high line shot over and over.
There you go. Yeah, then you'd feel really good about yourself. Got to challenge you. So I think that's it. And yeah, we could go on all day on that, but I like that question. We'll move on to Kessel. When we talk about it in the book, John Kessel, who we all know, and he's all over this book, but he says his objective is to never be a child's last coach, which again is a pretty powerful line. And I think especially the level of players he coaches a lot of high school level players. So I guess I was wondering for you guys, are there things you've done to help people want to keep playing? And, you know, like, you know, with this season, I feel like I did this, and this, and that led them to want to continue to play, maybe not even volleyball, but to continue to play sport.
I would say for me, number one, both as a coach and then receiving it as a player, is encouragement. I think it goes back to, like, what teachers did I have that encouraged me? And it was, I had some good English teachers that I liked and gave me some props. And so I became an English major. I think anything that you want to continue on, if you're, you know, getting your strokes from your coaches or your players or your teachers, that's going to push you to keep at it. And I think as a coach, when I can encourage players, show that I care about them and their development and that they should, you know, keep playing, go on to the next level, play in tournaments. I think that's what kind of fires kids up to, or players up to, keep pursuing volleyball.
Yeah, I agree. I think when growth is involved in anything, you kind of want to do it, you know, having success at something and getting better at things is a lot of fun. And so when you can have players do that, or teach players to do that, and they're actually happen to get the skills in volleyball, I think they want to be around it. You know, I had a fun experience at the last school that I worked at, where the boys volleyball specifically, there weren't a lot of people that were interested in it. So it was a very small group of guys that were kind of tight knit. And we were able to expand that tight knit group because of sort of the culture around it. You know what I mean? So the guys were fun. We had a good time. We would get better at whatever we were doing, but we're also very, like, inclusive of, if somebody showed interest, we would let them into the club type of thing. And there was a few guys that were, I mean, these guys were just terrible at the sport when they first came into the gym, but they didn't get made fun of. People encouraged them. People were nice to them. You know, it was immediately like, you're interested in the sport and you're working hard. Sweet. Come on in, you know, welcome. And they enjoyed that a lot. And it was really fun to watch that happen. And I think they continued through the program all the way until they graduated. I don't know if they ended up playing in college. I don't necessarily think they developed that level where they'd be able to, but they did want to continue to play and be a part of that. And they even quit some other sports that they were playing so they could put more effort into the volleyball. So that was really fun to watch that and be a part of that. And it's kind of just a reminder that it's not just about the growth or learning how to teach a kid to sight out. You know, if I used to say that, like, if the only thing you've learned when you leave my program is how to sight out, I've completely failed. So you teach them all the other life skills and the character skills and the things that they need to have success outside of the court as well. And I think as they learn those lessons and apply them to the court, that they want to stay on, you know, when they see that you like them, when they're learning, they're going to want to stick around. And it's fun to watch them grow and stick around and keep playing.
Yeah.
I think I've learned a lot about how you exit the player coach dynamic when players quit a team. And that happens every year across the country, every team. And I think when it takes a lot of courage for players to quit, and when they come to you and they express that they are thinking about leaving the team, if you acknowledge that it was really hard for them to bring that up and that you love and respect them no matter what, like it doesn't matter to you that they're leaving the program. I've had really positive relationships with people who have left the program, whatever team that I've been a part of, knowing that like, hey, that's a hard decision to make, and continuing sports at a elite level or whatever is not for everyone. Coach can falter is when their relationship is totally wrapped up in how someone performs on the court and not just like what their long-term life goals are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No surprise. Again, I didn't think any of us would be like, you know, when somebody does a four-step approach, that's when I feel like, you know, I've gotten them to come back and want to play again. But yeah, same for me. I love the line of we value.
Oh, yeah. If all they've been doing is a three-step.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, yeah, I love the line. We value who you are more than how you perform. So I think that's when players feel seen and when players feel cared for, like, you know, all the things you guys are saying, then they want to keep playing and they want to be, we're tribal. We want to be a part of something. We want to be a part of teams. And when we feel noticed, then we'll continue to do so.
I had one more, maybe in addition to that one piece of encouraging kids to stick around. I had one player that I think of recently. He continued to play volleyball, I guess, in college, but he played at the club level at whatever school he was. But he wanted to be around volleyball so much that he actually applied and became a manager of, it was a big time women's program. And so he wanted to play club for the school. They didn't have a men's team other than a club team, but then he also wanted to be a manager. He liked being around the culture of volleyball so much. And that was cool to see that he just wanted to be around the sport, the people that the sport attracts, that he continued in that way.
Right.
John, I like how you reframed it from how I've heard it of, we care about who you are, not how you perform, because I always hear it as we care about who you are, not what you do. And, I mean, I understand what the intention is, but like what you do is kind of who you are.
Yeah.
So like how you perform is a little clearer like that.
Right.
There's a really good book. It's probably like the first book about coaching that I ever read. I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's called Inside Out Coaching. Essentially, it breaks down. He breaks down coaches into two different categories: transformational and transactional. And it speaks to exactly what you're talking about there. And it's like I've always, from that point, tried to strive to be a transformational coach.
Right. Yeah, and I think both matter. We value performance and who you are. They both are important. But yeah, we're going to care about you more as a person than, you know, if you don't play well, we still really care about you as a person. That's a big deal. So we'll move on to the negative side of it. What have you guys done to maybe, you know, eliminate or push a player to not want to continue to play, if you have ever done that?
Yeah. When I first heard this, because again, like John said, this comes from John Kessel's quote about he was asked his record and he had like, oh, I'm, you know, he had this huge high number, and because he was talking about the kids that he's kept versus kids that he's lost. And part of me always thought like, how does he know who stuck around and played volleyball? Because where I was coached, like I wouldn't see the kid the next year. Like maybe they go to a different club. Maybe, you know, they go to a different high school. Like I rarely kept in touch with, unless the kid played for our club again. So I had no idea how many kids played because there was so much switching around. But I think that's also the root of what maybe I didn't do to keep kids was I kind of cared about this current season and what role can you play for my team now? You know, how can we have the best year this year and less on, you know, seeing this is the steps you need to take to play volleyball next year on this next team at this next level to get recruited. And just the fact that I don't even know where, if how many kids I lost, probably shows that that's where I was failing, was not checking up, not pushing it. It was kind of like Neil said, maybe it was, this is my transaction. I was your coach this year and I'm gonna do the best job I can. So we have a good year, but you know, I'm kind of done. And so I would say, having that limited focus of just that current year and season was probably maybe why I would lose some kids or did harm.
Yeah, I have one word for you with my experience with this, and it is accountability. If probably the biggest mistake that I made was holding kids like having way too high of standards, you know, not meeting them where they're at, not taking stock in what they're capable of, and just coming in to a new program really hot and losing players because of the standards that I demanded instead of, you know, coming in and showing them a way or a path through to find the improvement. It was demanded and that didn't go over well. So I think accountability, it's important obviously to hold kids accountable and players accountable for what's going on. But when you come in with way too high standards or something like that, it's not going to work out very well. So.
Yeah. That's something we have in the book from BJ Leroy. He talked about the idea of accountability and will you enforce this rule on your best player in the least ideal situation? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're going to have this, so did you ever have that happen where you know, I'm coming in, I'm a new coach, I'm going to set all these rules and then you kind of get burned by it?
Yeah, I mean, essentially that's kind of what happened with my experience with the girls program that I was running before I moved out here. You know, I mean, I came in hot. I completely shifted the culture into what I thought was important, and ultimately, I would argue it worked. You know, unfortunately, what happened is if I would have had 4 years, it would have worked. I was only given 3, so I wasn't able to continue with that program with the girls program there. They brought in a new coach, but you could see that the foundation, kind of cleaned house and then tried to set a new foundation. And before that foundation got set, I got ousted and somebody else came in. But the girls that were coming up, it was a much different and better culture from that standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I've had it too. Yeah, and I've had it too. I think we have the example in the book, some Billy humor, but like, you know, let's say you have the example or your team rule, you know, if you're late, you don't get to practice, and like, well, what if the kid just performed the Heimlich to save someone? Like, you're going to still like punish them, you know? So I think it's like, again, I think we talk about just being reasonable and trying to understand the situation. I one time had a team rule, if they were late for the bus, they didn't get to play. And I had it happen. The kid was a couple minutes late and it was like an all day tournament. So he ends up being there. Like, it was like one of our first tournaments of the year. Could have used all these reps, you know, if I would just set the rule of, oh, you don't get to start, or, you know, let's just figure out what happened and let's talk to each other and come up with a good plan. But instead, you know, I have to kind of stand by this rule. And yeah, so you can just really get yourself in trouble when you box yourself in like that. But anyways, back to the kind of the question, Andrew, did you have things you've done to maybe, and I don't know, stop someone from wanting to keep playing?
I'm probably. they don't play anymore. So, no, it's a hard thing to tell, but I think just the really easy answer is not valuing them higher as a person over their performance. So. Yeah, it's tough.
It's a hard question, and I think it's like, again, dependent on level. I feel like where I struggle with it now, you know, when you're a college coach and you know you have jobs on the line and there's high stress and performance does matter and it's a part of being paid and you know things like that, is I, you know, you have to prioritize. So like, shouldn't I put all my focus into the players that are going to play in the matches? I think at times, I think that's true. I think you do have to do that, but at times I've taken that way too far, where all my focus and all my attention was only on people who would play. And if I've invited someone to be on my team, I have to find ways to help everyone grow. And it doesn't always have to be, again, like we said, volleyball skills. So it could be just spending a little time and having a quick conversation away from the court, or, you know, maybe just setting up a film time that they can come in at a different time. But I think just making sure I'm hands-on with everyone that's a part of our team and not just laser focused on the starters. I think that's where I've struggled at times.
Yeah. And that reminds me of just a lack of clarity about roles and responsibilities within the team in the past that I think can be really frustrating for players. So I've definitely tried to work on clarifying each person's role, no matter like where they are in the pecking order.
Right. Yeah, that's really important, the role clarity. So we're going to get into the principles from Brent Crouch and kind of how to, form your principles. But before we did, we had a little story in the book that just made me laugh again. How, because Billy and I, especially when you come out to the beach, there's no coaches really. And, I don't know, it's just a little bit of the Wild West. And so Billy and I would pay this coach and he'd have us do a cartwheel and then go dig a ball. And, we were stoked about it. Like, yeah, we'll give this guy money to keep getting us to do this because, yeah, we weren't steeped in principles and we didn't have, really strong reasons behind the way we wanted to train. And maybe I wasted some time and some money. I don't know. At the same time, I have some good memories from it. But I think it just shows kind of the value of having principles and taking the time to go through it and understand why you do what you do. Do you regret those cartwheels, Billy?
Probably got in shape.
Your shoulders look great.
Thanks. I think same thing as a coach. I had so many drills that I did just trying to, I had like this big chest of drills. I would create drills and be very little consistency with the players, where if you have your principles and you kind of know what your core, effective drills are, you can definitely maximize your time and not, waste your players' time too.
Exactly. So we'll go through how you can develop your principles and Brent Crouch really laid it out in the book. And ours, not in the book, but on a podcast a long time ago, a couple years ago. It's a great one if anyone hasn't listened to it. He talks about the methods where you can discover your principles and kind of the most common ones. And maybe you guys can share which ones you've used the most often and we can go from there. But yeah, the first one's the method of tenacity. It's basically the belief that, you've always done it this way, so I'm going to continue to do it, even if there's evidence not supporting it. Of course we always roll after we dig a ball because we won, 10 games last year. So that's the method of tenacity. I think all of us have probably, all of these we've probably, been victim to. The method of authority, which is a common one, adopting the methods of those who have had success. If there's a coach who wins a lot in your city, then you go watch them and learn from them. And it makes sense to do that. I think where you can get in trouble is, maybe they just have the best players in their league and that's why they win. Not because their principles or their methods are the strongest. The method of solitary thinking, kind of when you don't want to learn from authority, you're not going to do what's always been done. You want to be really creative and dive in and study the game on your own and figure out a new way to, kind of rewrite the game. So I think there's value to doing this and studying the game and figuring things out, but then it might become more about innovation than actually what's effective and what can work. And then the final one's the method of science, where, you're not using tradition, opinion, fad, or originality, but you're looking for evidence and, trying to figure out why to do the things that you want to do. And this one takes the most amount of time. It's the hardest to do. But yeah, is there any that you guys think you've kind of leaned on the most?
Yeah, I would say I definitely had some tenacity when I first started because just kind of maybe I was coached by one way and I'll just keep doing it. But I would say mostly authority, that I don't do many science experiments. Most of it is I'm coaching from what I've learned and from another coach, from a podcast, from a book, stuff like that. So I would say authority, most of my principles come from.
I think that method, it's a big part of it. Like, authorities matter and there's a reason why people study it, and we should we can trust doctors and we can trust certain people because they've done the work. So I think it's about surrounding yourself with the right network and the right authorities. Doesn't mean what they say is going to be right. You can still question it.
You use authority if the people you're stealing from use the scientific method.
So. There's lots of mistakes in science too. It doesn't mean it's right, but
it's a trickle down effect.
Yeah.
But I think if you're going to use that method, then I think you want to be really thoughtful about who you're surrounding yourself with.
What about you guys?
Yeah, I think early on in my coaching, it was tenacity. I think everybody's starting point when you first start coaching is just coach how you were coached. Then slowly it started becoming more authority. Like what is some of the authority, especially when I had some teams, it wasn't even really deep analytical thinking on my part of what to do. I would just go and watch one or two drills that somebody was doing and just steal them and use them. And it wasn't necessarily understanding why they were using them like that. It was just steal them and use them. So maybe they worked, but I didn't understand why. For a while there, when I was doing a lot of private lessons for like 3-4 years, and that was my main gig, I think that was probably the time where I did a lot of the solitary thinking. I would have so many players come in of different levels and things and trying to break them down. I think there was a lot of valuable frameworks that came out of that time period for me, but there was also, I did so many wacky things just because I had the freedom to experiment and mess around with kids. All of my takeaways in that case were anecdotal as well. So it's not necessarily the most scientific way to go about doing things. But I mean, some of the things that I would end up doing were just super wacky and it was kind of fun and break the monotony for myself. And also sometimes the players would come in week after week after week after week. And it was like, yeah, we're making slow, steady progress, but we got to do something crazy just to break the monotony and get them more engaged. And they didn't necessarily get better at the skill, but maybe we had a good time doing it.
Nils, first of all, this sounds miserable to me. Like you would do like 8 hours in a row of private lessons.
Yeah, but, unbelievable.
But, I picture, because the gym you coached at had a bunch of like gadgets and stuff around. So I picture you just being like, huh, how can I use that hockey stick on this drill?
No, that's literally some of the things that would happen. It was hilarious. I had a really good time, and some of the methods and some of the ways that I talk about some of the skills now, I think help resonate because of that time. But my goodness, I was using hockey sticks. I was using cages. I was using one of the stories. This is probably a sidebar, so anybody listening can fast forward, but it was really fun at the time. One of the guys I was working with was a middle blocker, and for whatever reason, he just had no awareness of like his hands in space. You know, he was in ninth grade, I think. He was like 6'10", so he had grown all this. So I was trying to get him to understand just like where his hands were at. And we had taped the lids of like these big Tupperware jars. I don't know if it worked, but it was pretty fun. I have a picture of it somewhere.
I think there's something to be said for enthusiasm, you know, coming in and playing for someone who's fired up about what they're doing, whether it's, you know, completely in line with motor learning science.
Or, come on, you listen to Freakonomics. He just had a guy.
Yeah, they were just
there.
Exactly.
I forget the guy's name, and that's what he said. Enthusiasm is worth 25 IQ points.
Exactly, that jumped out at me. Like, yeah. that's what I thought. But yeah, if you present something super dry and boring, and even if it's, you know, right in line with the science, I don't know if the kids get fired up and learn as much. So there's a lot to be said for like being excited about what you're doing. Now, can you be excited about what you're doing and use, you know, the optimal methods? That's a good way to go about it. What about for you, Andrew?
Yeah, I think if you think of a pie chart, the size of each slice has kind of changed for me. I think when I first started coaching, I really wanted to be on the creative end. And so it was a lot of solitary thinking with a little bit of authority, a little bit of scientific method. But it's sort of shifted to maybe 25% solitary thinking and 40% authority and whatever is left for scientific method. But I think solitary thinking is important for pushing the game forward. If you think of someone like in Adrian Karambula is someone who's probably pushing the game further along right now than anyone else. And he wouldn't have arrived at that spot by the tenacity method, authority, or scientific method, because the things that he's doing on the court, like, no one else is doing. And so it you have to have a little bit of, I think, in everyone and some people a little bit more to move things along. And then we go back and we study it. Okay, is it effective? Is it winning? Is it helping performance? And then it kind of like gets back in that spin cycle.
Yeah, I think if you're the stuff that is like generally out there is like applied to the masses. So if you're like a 5'9" chubby little guy that's trying to play in the Olympics, like, you're going to have to come up with some unique and different strategies. So
yeah. And you might, as a coach, you're not always going to have the same level of athleticism on your roster that other people are going to have. And so you might have to do some stuff that's a little bit unorthodox.
Yeah, I think there was a time when no one had ever done a 4-step jump float or no one had ever done a swing block. And so, yeah, I think that's where the progress comes from, studying players. And then you got to study, like, does this work? You know, is what mm-hmm. they're doing, does it move the game forward? Does it allow for you to jump higher or to do something, you know, even at a different level? But yeah, the players drive the game. And then you can look at,
yeah,
you know, can you, is that repeatable, is what they're doing? Can I get my players to be able to do what they're doing? But yeah,
yeah, and that goes for indoor and beach. You see players pushing the envelope in both games, and we could come up with a lot of examples, but I don't think that there's just like one answer for the best possible method. I think it can fluctuate depending on kind of what you're working with, what your needs are.
Just like, as far as with the science method, one of the things that you need for that is obviously data. And nowadays with volumetrics and data video and that kind of thing, the amount of data is just incredible that we can pull and analyze from the game. So I think it becomes a little bit both easier and more complicated to try to analyze some of that data and figure out what works in different situations. So we are able potentially to rely on the scientific method a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. It's grown on the beach side too. But I think there's lots of ways. I mean, that's like the way that jumps out the most is the data side of the game, but there's lots of ways to use the method of science. Like, I mean, we have, you know, we have decades of research from Carol Dweck in the field of psychology, which is a science about growth mindset. So, you know, if you use that principle of, you know, teaching people to learn at all costs, and, you know, that then you are using the method of science. I mean, there's, you know, stuff in neuroscience coming about how we learn best. So you can use neuroscience, understanding biomechanics, you know, how people move most effectively. So there's lots of ways to lean on science to inform your principles versus these other ones where it's more hit and miss. That hasn't been studied. There isn't maybe as much behind why the person does what they do. So I think there is lots of ways to incorporate it. It doesn't always mean you have to be a scientist. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely hard to use that method as your main principle, but I push people to find ways to do it.
So would you say that using Carol Dweck's information on your team is not using the method of authority?
Well, it's not about Carol Dweck. It's about the research on learning.
Right. That's what I mean. I guess I don't personally maybe run a lot of science experiments with my teams, but that's what I meant by like using authority that other people have already done that use kind of science.
Yeah. I mean, to be science, it has to be like peer reviewed. It can't be like, this is Carol Dweck's theory. It's like, this is the theory of, you know, growth and fixed mindset. And then you have all sorts of psychologists and scientists, you know, try to replicate it. And then if it's replicated, then it's science. So it's, you know, by design, science is not a method of authority. Like, it can't be about people. It's about, so maybe we, there's one more part I wanted to go into before we finish. We have a little part about Billy's philosophy of not getting carded. So Billy's never gotten a yellow card in his 30 years of playing volleyball.
Really?
Never gotten one.
Not one?
And
not even like on accident.
How do you get one on an accident?
I don't know. When you're F-bomb,
when you're like, lovable and charismatic.
Oh my gosh.
So I guess I want to throw it out on the table. Do you guys agree with that philosophy of his to not get a card at all costs?
Well, Billy, maybe you could go into more detail in why that's your philosophy.
Yeah. And again, I don't think it's something you would agree or not agree on, because it's, you know, it was something for me personally. Like, I don't think, you know, Michael Jordan after watching The Last Dance would be on the same page. But for me, I had heard, and it's a tenet that I hear a lot in coaching, is like kind of bragging about how you accosted the ref and like what you said, and like, oh, I deserve this card because I did this. And it's kind of show off. I kind of show off like that. And same thing with players, like, you know, Todd Rogers or whoever, just like screaming at a ref and kind of like laugh afterwards. And like, I one of my values is respect, and I really respect what refs do. I would never want to do it. It's a really hard job. The guys we work with and girls we work with on the AVP, like, we see them at every stop. And for me, just to show respect and for what they do is to be respectful to them. So like, I never want to be being seen as berating them. You know, you can challenge and argue and have a conversation, but just to have that kind of like bragging about belittling somebody else that's trying to do their job as best as they can, like, that's important to me, to be respectful. And so that's why that value applies to me.
But what if it's B. Lee on the stand?
Well, you let him have it, but you know, there's yeah. there's a line you just don't cross.
No, and you're right. I don't think agree is the right word. I guess I wanted to see if you guys thought it was the best way to be a competitor. I'm guessing your goal is to win matches and win AVP championships and FIVB matches and championships. And
I've seen both sides. Like,
yeah, me too.
I definitely agree with what Billy's saying. And I also see, like, from a competitive standpoint, that if you argue a call really aggressively, you might get a call later on that's going to turn the tide. And you see that a lot with referees making makeup calls, you know, where they maybe shouldn't have inserted themselves later on. But from a competitive standpoint, I understand both ends.
I hear that argument a lot. And I wonder if it's one of those things where that's the ones that stick out. It's like, oh, I yelled about his hands and he got called like the next game later, one call. Or I also feel like having a relationship with refs and stuff, like, I don't know. I feel like I might get some calls because they like me. Like, so I see it both ways, but you definitely, like, because it's so on your brain, because you berated and everybody in the crowd just saw this coach tear into this guy, that one call later, maybe it sticks out. So yeah. I'd say it's hard to measure.
I mean, you probably did win Seattle because the refs gave it to you.
Yeah. I let a lot go.
No, and I don't want to come across like I don't respect it. And I just wanted to build the conversation around it and challenge it a little bit. And I think there's, like you said, there's a lot of good to it.
Billy's bragging just as much about how great he is to the refs as people are bragging about how terrible they are to refs.
Yeah.
What if you have a partner who really values competing and he gets into it with refs and he wants you to kind of like, hey, you got to have my back. Like, when we're kind of fighting for points, what would you do in that situation?
That's a good question. I would have to have him convince me that it was going to lead to more wins before I sold my soul, I guess.
What if he used the method of authority and said, I guess it'd be the method of tenacity. It's always worked for me in the past. You know, I've won. Yeah. Look, I'm Todd Rogers. I've won 50 tournaments. Like, I need you to battle with me.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I have a different view of competitive. And so if I was having a conversation and they were saying, well, this is competitive to be a jerk, you know, I would probably have to be sold on that a little bit more.
I just respect that you have such a strong opinion about it and you can articulate it so well.
You have a cutting wit. I have full confidence that you'd be able to get a yellow card in a very calm delivery.
No, I think I'd get away with it. That's the problem. The ref's like, oh, he's just joking. That's so cute.
Well, let's finish it off with our three-word coaching philosophy. That's how we finish this chapter. Something, you know, John Kessel, another thing from him. So, Bill, you want to start it off?
Yeah, in the book, I give my three-word coaching philosophy: learn, compete, enjoy. I would probably stick with that. I think it's a good model for growth. As a challenge, I was trying to think of if I changed it, what it would be. And we've been talking a lot lately about just present, and word backup would be win this moment. Just about, you know, whether it's a drill, whether it's, you know, that couple minutes of getting water with your teammates, maybe it's when you're at home by yourself, just kind of just do your best to succeed and live out your values in that particular moment.
Yeah, for a while. I like that, Billy. That's a good change too. Now I'm thinking about mine. I kind of went through the same thing. So for a while, mine, integrity, character, leadership, and that seemed somewhat written slightly too heavy as well. And the thing that I came up with was basically, it's two words. It's improve yourself, something like that. Would be some direction. I'm sold on it, but that's kind of where I got.
Got good bones, Nails. Run with it.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like three words, improve yourself.
No. Spelling's never been my thing. So as long as it feels like three words, I'm okay with it.
Splitting the words might be a fun wordplay. So mine was, like I said earlier, joy and challenge. Putting them together and seeing all the good that can come from it.
Nice. And mine, in the book, I put Listen to Fugazi, my favorite band, in the intro to our I can't believe that made it in the book. I put that as a joke. I didn't think it would stay in there. But
I was waiting for you to send a real one. You never did, so.
Yeah. But actually, my real one is Commit to Excellence, and that's actually taken from a Fugazi album. But yeah, I think of there you go. I signed the book, Commit to Excellence. So I think of it as doing everything you can at the highest level you can, not about someone else's level, but, and I think when you set that commitment, then the people around you respect you and listen to you and want to follow. So yeah, I try to do that in whatever I do. And then I just have that little, you know, Fugazi nugget with it. So it makes it mean more. So that's it.
I think this section is important. I also, when we were writing it, I had some trouble differentiating between like philosophy, principles, values, kind of mix, and maybe it's semantic, but I think it's really important to, like, we talk about this getting down to three words, and maybe that's a little extreme, but to really be clear on what your principles and your philosophy is, because I just think it makes your job easier as a coach. I know I've had times where I'm afraid to talk to parents of my club players because maybe I'm not super clear on what my philosophy and principles were. And I think if you know the reason behind why you make your decisions, and you can back that up and speak clearly, I think it just makes inner players, parents, with anybody much better.
Yeah, and it takes time too. I don't know if you guys emphasized how much thought and how much work goes into making very simple situations or simple philosophies like that, and how you frame them and that kind of thing. Just as a side note, my wife and I went on a walk, and we were walking for over an hour, and the whole time we were arguing or debating, I guess would be a better way to say it, how we structure our philosophies, because our philosophies are very similar, and I worded mine a little bit differently than she worded hers, and I was giving her the reasons why I worded mine the way that I did and why she words hers the way that she did. You know, I don't know if there was any takeaways from that other than some semantic arguments, but it takes a lot of work, and you can sit there and after you've done it, talk for an hour and still maybe have some work to do. So it just takes some time.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like Billy said, how, you know, with coaching, with playing, every season's so different and new challenges come. So if you're not clear on these, then you can end up in a whirlwind. I think we've been in those situations. So I think, and then you learn from all those mistakes that you made. And I do think it's really important to challenge them. Like, I think it's important that we challenge Billy's value of not arguing with refs, and for him to think about it. And because all these can be fluid, they can all be adjusted. And so, yeah, spend the time thinking about it and challenging yourself. And I think by being challenged, you can go two ways. You can feel stronger about it. Like, I think Billy feels even firmer about his, and or maybe you'll adjust it and find an even better principle.
I don't know. I don't think Billy's going to sleep well tonight.
I think he is.
I'm going to tear somebody down from the stand this year.
I like how Billy goes, like, he thinks because he doesn't argue, that's like, that's what you have to do to like maul a ref instead of like.
Yeah. Yeah. Say there's a difference between arguing and getting a yellow card.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think there's a line there that, yeah. I'm not saying I never object or argue at all. I would just say I never like try to humiliate or disrespect somebody to get a yellow card.
Right. But I've never seen you argue either.
I say it under my breath really quiet.
You can kind of feel, you can almost feel Billy arguing with me right now. He's thinking about it. Well, this is fun. We, chapter one, what we got, cool, eight more chapters
for,
to go.
Thanks for doing this.
Yep.
Yeah. What's next? Neil, what's next?
I don't know what we do. Mindset.
Hey.
Hey, got it this time.
Keep saying mindset.
So if you guys, it's cool. Hopefully you guys are following along. If you don't have the book, it's called Code Your Brains Out. It's available on Amazon, on Barnes and Noble, on pretty much anywhere you can get books, both on paperback and ebook. So get it and check it out.